Full Service Radio is supported by Compass, the future of real estate in the Metro DC area and beyond. Discover more at compass.com.
You're tuned in to Full Service Radio.
Full Service Radio.
Full Service.
Full Service.
Full Service.
Full Service Radio.
All right, friends, welcome to Shift Drink on Full Service Radio, broadcasting live from the Lion Hotel in Adams Morgan, Washington, D.C. I'm Matthew Ramsey, ninja, cowboy, Viking.
Oh, wow. That's quite a few hats you're wearing. I'm Eddie Kim, proud DCist, Kokeshi collector, and nomadic bartender about town. Every week, we share a drink and swap war stories from behind the line with chefs, bartenders, bakers, brewers, and pretty much anyone who touches this all-encompassing industry. This week, we welcome back Matthew.
I'm back, baby.
From a sabbatical to his motherland. The far hinterlands of Texas.
Yeah, it's deep Texas.
And we're joined by co-founder of Knife Sharpening Mecca at Union Market District Cutlery, Derek Swanson. Welcome.
Hey, guys.
What's up? What's up? Now, before we dig into it, let's do some weekend recap. Eddie Kim.
Yes, we have quite a week.
Yeah.
I think first and foremost, on Saturday night, we heard about the passing of Jonathan Gold, probably the foremost food critic for L.A. If you don't know any of his work, I think a lot of chefs all around the country and writers kind of aspire to write like he does. At least to me, he represents a lot of what food writing is missing in these days, food criticism.
Yeah.
We try to bring together everything about a city, all of the little nooks and crannies. It's not just about the fancy and the restaurants with all the hype. He really understood what LA was all about.
And I think this little quote kind of sums up his style pretty accurately. He said, when it's done properly, tacos should be a verb.
I knew that was going to touch your heart.
Yeah.
It's funny. He probably knew more about every single taco stand in LA than any person of Latin origin. And he probably knew more about every single Korean joint in Koreatown in LA more than any Korean. So that's a huge testament to what he represented.
Absolutely. Also in news, Kim Jenus, former pastry chef of Pineapple and Pearls, is opening up a little ice creamery in the Windy City, Chicago. It's going to be called Pretty Cool. So go visit her. She's pretty cool herself, and she is missed.
You worked with her a bit. Does she have any signature flavors?
She does a lot of fun, savory flavors. Well, at least Pineapple Pearls, that was her thing. But since day one, she's always been all about that ice cream and sorbets and stuff. So she has some really cool stuff. She had a wonderful Fernet flavor, actually.
Oh, great.
Yeah, good. Speaks to my heart.
Mm-hmm. And a little bit of local news. One of our council members, Jack Evans, with all of the national news about plastic straws, we just introduced a little bit of legislation to get rid of it here in D.C., although there was already legislation on the books for it, so a little bit of repetition, but at least we're getting the ball rolling.
Yeah. Buy straws. We got to think about those turtles, you guys. And all of you tipped workers out there against I-77, make sure you're staying vocal with your district reps so we can get this thing overturned.
Yep.
It's still in limbo.
Yep. Still for foremost in mind. Okay, so Derek, how are you doing?
Doing great.
You just came from... You've already had your shift drink on your day off.
Derek is in full-on vacay mode right now.
Started today.
What time did you start?
I did have to do a meeting this morning on the phone, but I got to Lyman's about 11:30 and started playing some pinball.
Mm-hmm. Lyman's is one of our favorite bars. It's a pinball bar, the first in D.C. You don't see very many of them here on the East Coast. But
yeah, they've got a good collection there.
Yeah, yeah, but you're not in the league. So they have a Monday league. But
There's a league, a pinball league at a bar. That's amazing.
I'm aspiring to join the league.
What is it? I mean, like, what is... At what level do you need to be to join the league?
I think it's super cool. You you put your name on a piece of paper, and I think you just compete for the high score.
That's amazing.
It looks like a lot of fun. But yeah, I'm just never able to go consistently every week as much as I'd like to.
That's
and you're wearing a knife shirt right now. Does most of your wardrobe involve some kind of knife pun or?
Yeah, there are a lot of knife shirts in the drawer at home.
Right.
Yeah. This one's by my friend Takayuki Shibata, who makes some really sweet blades in Japan.
His shirt reads "Art over Beauty." By the way,
definitely going to ask you about those Japanese knives.
Yeah.
So, what are we drinking, Derek?
It's called White Claw.
So I got the email for this asking Derek what to drink, and I really wasn't sure if it was a joke or not.
I think it might have been.
Yeah,
the joke's on us.
The joke is kind of on us, but it's also right. on you.
My knife maker Brian was he's into him now, and
I will say it goes down incredibly smooth.
So this is White Claw Hard Seltzer.
It has a fierce
ruby,
name.
Grapefruit.
White Claw.
5% alcohol, so it's not.
You can barely taste some malt liquor. This is almost. Would you call this like a Japanese highball, Eddie Kim? You know
what?
A little bit.
Oh my god! Actually, now that I think about it, it does have a lot of the same notes, the nuance.
I knew that would get you. Now, because we did kind of think you were fucking with us, we decided to fuck with you back.
Thanks.
Yeah. Sure. So reach under your chair. Alexia, you can reach under your chair too. I think yours is actually on the floor.
Oh, yeah.
you've been iced.
Everyone's motherfuckers.
Now, according to all technicalities, the rules and games, you have to get on your knees and chug it all in one thing.
It's probably a twist.
Alexia, to be fair, we didn't know if that was going to be you or Jack today, so consider yourself lucky. Jack, if you're listening, know that there's one other one hidden in the studio.
You dodged a bullet.
All right.
Atlas is going to get it for sure for this one.
Oh, my God. Oh, it's a twisty, too.
Actually, I think, Eddie, I put some in your bag, too. We might as well just drink it.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
So on the knees, really?
Yeah, you definitely got
it. All right.
Do it for the photo.
You have to do it for the...
Alexi's coming out here as well. Hold on.
I think it's only one knee. Derek is on full double knee.
Full meditation right. position.
Oh, my God.
Alexia, you got to get on your knee, Alexia.
Aww.
I think this is a studio first.
Cheers, Alexia.
All right. Fantastic. So, Brian, well Maybe done. Not. If you're listening, you just got your partners iced.
We're breaking new ground, this show.
Ah, man. I don't know if this is new ground as much as it is old ground revisited. What, Eddie Kim, do you know anything about the history of icing?
I did a little research.
Oh, they both finished. Well done, guys.
Oh, wow. Good job, guys. Oh, good job.
As Derek struggles to get back into his chair.
That's the good stuff. That's the ice original.
All right.
So it came about around 2010. And the meme was called Bros Icing Bros. But was it
a Smirnoff campaign?
No. They did not mean to... I think they did not mean to do it. It just came about. And websites pop up. Diageo, who owns Smirnoff, eventually... I mean, they got a lot of flack for for it. So
encouraging binge behavior.
They took down the websites, and they wanted to tell people to calm down. But I hear it's making a resurgence now. I just read an article that a couple of White House staffers were caught icing each other
God.
Recently.
Do not even put me in the same boat as those fuckers.
They just found out about it, too, I hear.
Yeah.
it's all new again. Sweet. So we're drinking Smirnoff Ice and fortified seltzer.
We do have once we struggle through these drinks, we do have a third bottle.
Yeah. Tell us about what you brought, Derek, because it's really cool.
Frank Pascal. Rosé champagne. I love champagne. It's usually just automatic.
Yeah.
The
tight bubbles.
Yeah, this is a small producer. I guess you can call him grower. But yeah, the plots of land. What's the?
He's a grower and a shower, apparently.
A grower and a shower. But the the parcels that where his vines are grown are one of the distinctions is that the there's an abundance of grindstones, yeah, or AKA sharpening stones in the soil there, which I thought was ironic.
That's super, yeah, cool. Yeah,
I think it's, I think the area, the Ile de France, is just outside Paris, and so I can imagine that, you know, what are you going to do with a bunch of used grindstones? Is throw them into the countryside, yeah, and then start growing wine. So this is very, very on brand for you.
Like it. Regardless, it's champagne.
Yeah. Fuck yeah. All right, so we'll hurry through this seltzer here.
It's going to be a rough day.
Right on. Well, let's talk about some truths and some lies. What do you got for us?
Two truths, one lie.
Now, this is just kind of a vehicle for us to really get to know the inner Derek.
Coincidentally, the name of my childhood pediatrician and also my brother's pediatrician, Dr. Cutler.
Mm,
and we consider ourselves to be Cutlers. So that's number one.
So he actually got a PhD though in cutlery.
Yeah. Master.
Yeah.
he was old school. Number two, every time Jose Andres brings his knives in for sharpening, he also brings ham sandwiches.
Ooh.
He himself?
Well, he sends people. Oh. Sometimes he comes over. But
that's a really nice touch, if that's true.
Usually sends
people. Not saying
people.
It is.
Number three, my knife career started with an unsuccessful stint as a door-to-door Cutco knife salesman.
Hmm. That would make sense.
No.
Yeah.
Does Cutco even exist anymore?
Do people really knock door to door with knives in their hands? That's a shady operation.
Dangerous.
Never thought of that. Jose, I'm gonna say, so we saying the third one's a lie?
I can believe Jose, and then
Jose seems like doctor, yeah, he would do that.
Yeah, let's say the third one's a lie. You were not a Cutco salesman.
I was.
What? God damn it.
God damn it.
Is it the ham sandwiches?
It's the ham sandwiches.
God damn it. I just wanted that to be true. He brings food to the masses. That's what he does.
He does. Yeah, I mean,
Jose.
He puts Jose on his pants one leg at a time, just like everybody else, except when he does it, he goes out and saves the world.
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay. I think Jose, we know, listens to our show regularly, so maybe he'll start doing that.
That'd be nice.
Yeah. Jose Andres, local. He's our chef celebrity.
Yeah.
Saving Humanitarian of the Year at the James Beard Awards this year, so.
Yeah. He's been doing well.
He's on the cover of Time Magazine, wasn't he, recently?
He's been everywhere. He was at the Oscars.
Oh, yes. Yes, he was part of that event. Anyways, feeding the masses, but not you.
Someday. Please, Jose, if you're...
Yeah.
Sandwich.
And you start off as a knife salesman. That's where this all began.
I guess it did. Yeah, the two stints aren't necessarily connected. But Cutco recruits naive kids like me to sell their knives door to door in their multi-level marketing scheme.
Is it pyramid shaped?
I guess so, because there's like you, there's you, and then there's two people under you, and there's four people under them. So I think
where were you in this
Boston area? This was where I grew up. Right, I think it was between high school and college. But yeah, I didn't have it in me. Even though they're actually good knives.
You guys sell a lot of those at your shop right now, right?
They come in for they come in for sharpening. I'm no longer on the Cutco employee role.
You've made it to the top of the pyramid.
Yeah,
but you do see Cutco knives come in.
They come in all the time.
Wow.
Yeah,
it's not still a door to door situation.
As far as I know,
mall kiosks and stuff like that, is that a thing?
As far as I know, they're still doing it the same way.
That's amazing.
Do you remember your spiel?
Well, the one thing everyone remembers is the sell, you know, the convincing pitch is you actually cut a penny with these crazy scissors. They're really
strong scissors. I've seen that, yeah.
And copper's really soft, so you can just like blasted this petty.
And is that what it is?
Then you're signing them up for that 10-piece set. Like,
do you carry around like aluminum cans and cut the shit out of them?
That's really fucking amazing. Yeah, I would be blown away by a cut penny.
Yeah. So back in the day, that was the first sign that.
Have you always kind of just been a knife nerd? Were you that weird, awkward teenager that's always coming home with like new knives and stuff? Or
I wasn't. It's kind of a string of coincidences led me into this field, and I'm glad they happened.
It started with your pediatrician.
Let's start with the pediatrician. that was true, Dr. Cutler, God rest his soul. Yeah, at the time when we got this thing started, we weren't sure. It was just going to be kind of a side gig, a local sharpening shop. And I was kind of bored with my government job at the time and wanted to get something else started. And the timing, I met the developer at Union Market, Richie Brandenburg. A lot of people know him in town, great guy. That first morning, the market opened, and we just got to chatting, and I told him I was getting this knife thing started, and he's like, why don't you come set up shop here next week, because I actually want to put a knife shop in this market.
Cool. All right,
cool. So I showed up the following week with a handful of sharpening stones, a bucket of water, and an iPad or Square credit card reader, and a set up signs to open for business. And
how amazing! So that's where it all began. I remember, was there like a truck or something?
Yeah, we were doing mobile. We were driving around. Uh-huh. Yeah, you gotta hustle when you get stuff started.
I remember you with your truck and delivering and dropping off knives and that's how I was introduced to you. How did you get the word out and like get the? I assume your first customers were chefs. You first started the truck.
I think my actual first customer was the head chef at Rappahannock Oysters, and I remember doing a terrible job on his knife, and I don't think he ever brought me his plate again. But at the time, because Union Market was just getting started, it was a new thing too. We were just relying on people coming to check it out, and so it was real. Fortunately, that market, it does bring in
some traffic,
a lot of people from all over, and so we just kept working there, and business was, you know, the traffic flow is sufficient to keep it going, and we've been able to grow and, you know, I think provide a better product and a better service.
Right on. Since then. I actually bought my first Japanese knife from you guys. This is right before I started doing my pop-ups out of my house at Bar R. And I was like, if I'm going to do this, I need to get my own soul for my kitchen here. And you walked me through all the knives, and I ended up with one. It was beautiful.
You've got the Nishida-san.
Yeah.
He's from Kumamoto, is where he makes knives. He's been doing it for over 35 years.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
I love it. I've since named it John Wayne. That's my blade. I feel like kind of in your earlier days, I guess, now.
Yeah. Yeah, I count you as an early VIP.
Right on.
I was gonna bring my book too, but then I realized that you had already autographed it. So I was just like, well, I could get a double autograph.
Yeah, double autograph. Like, it's worth twice the money. Yeah, because Lord knows I don't autograph books anymore. So do you guys still have the truck or no?
We took the decals off the truck. It's got too hard to drive around this town.
What was it? I mean, was it? It wasn't like a food truck.
It was a Nissan Cube.
Yes,
which is the perfect size. It's got that rear door that swings open to the side instead of being above your head, so you didn't have to. You don't have to crouch. And we used to sharpen knives out of the back of that car.
That's amazing. The inspiration now being the cut code. Now we know this is like you're taking your knives on the road.
Yeah,
that's amazing. And so now the Cube serves more of a utilitarian family function.
Yeah, the Cube spends most of its time in the Union Market parking lot.
Yeah. Right on.
So now you're kind of shifting a little bit from, you're still sharpening knives, but now you're going a little bit, you're going retail. And you did go through a rebranding recently from DC Sharp to District Cutlery.
We did. The DC Sharp apparently didn't register in places outside of DC, so no one really knew what we were like, what it meant. And so, yeah, I think that the motivation was primarily search engine optimization.
Right on.
To make make our products easier to find for customers outside of the DC market.
I mean, here on Shifter, we're no strangers to rebranding. We're currently in the process of, we have to switch our own name, I think, because there's another.
We do have to change names.
Shift Drink out there. So listeners, suggestions are welcome. Top of Chef Adam Greenberg also recently went through some rebranding. He's no longer Top of Chef. He's Chef Adam Greenberg.
Very generic, but it'll do.
What is it like kind of changing names this far through your process?
It's pretty straightforward, except that we still can't figure out how to change our Facebook name. Yeah. It's like they're playing a joke on us. They will not let us change. You have to die on Facebook in order to come back as somebody else.
Reborn to Phoenix.
But hopefully, other than that, it just took some time.
And you got a new website. Listeners, this is like a little user's tip out there. You can literally contact these guys with any of your knife questions, and it all goes to Derek's phone directly. So literally any questions about life, girl trouble, relationship advice, Derek will be
pictures.
Derek will be on the ready.
I'm here for y'all right now.
Yeah.
So, we're taking listener questions right now.
We're taking questions for sure. Or Derek is, at least. What do you guys look at when you get a knife in, whether they're new or old? What do you see that?
What's the first thing?
Most of us, yeah.
Does your gut wrench at how horribly knives have been? Yeah,
cleanliness is usually the first sign. But we're just trying to help people out. People basically bring us a problem, and our job is to fix it. So regardless of what condition someone's knife is in, we can normally make it better.
Yeah.
We do get a lot of customers who have purchased. There's some stuff on the market that's low grade and is just not going to hold up well. So if someone brings me a whole set of those things, I'd be like, hey, if you're ever going to upgrade, like now might be the time because you're about to drop $150 in sharpening these things that aren't going to stay sharp.
Right.
Only need like one or two really good ones to get by.
You don't need that 10 set.
The 10 piece set. I know. After you cut that penny though,
I mean, I gotta say, like sometimes I go into a bike shop and I drop my bike off and I can just feel like the judgment oozing out of, it's a bike shop. That's kind of how they roll. You guys aren't, that's not really your style.
I mean, we try.
I'm sure it's hard though sometimes when you just see some of these things coming in.
Yeah. I mean, everyone has what they have, and there's a lot of variety in kitchen knives,
sure,
specifically, because they meet certain needs. So it's just a function of where someone was at the time they realized they needed a kitchen knife, and what was available is usually what drives.
I brought in a file that had been reshaped into a knife for Brian, and Brian's like, I don't know what the fuck to do with this. it's a really fucking cool piece, but it's like it's a hard one to mess with.
So you stumped him, huh?
I did, yeah. But this, to be fair, this is a while ago.
All right, yeah, he might be more capable. He's been crafting some impressive pieces lately on his own. So
let's take a break real quick, and when we get back, we'll kind of talk about that next chapter in the DC Cutlery.
Yep.
All right, we're with Mr. Derek of DC Cutlery, and you're listening to Shift Drink on Full Service Radio.
Let's Go Us Baby by Keto, and you're tuned in to Full Service Radio.
Mm-hmm.
All right, thanks for coming back. You're listening to Shift Drink here on Full Service Radio. We're joined by Derek Swanson, one of the co-founders of District Cutlery, the correct name of your business.
Hope you're listening, Facebook.
You specialize in sharpening knives, and now you're selling knives, and now you're starting to make, or thinking about making your own knives.
We are. Yeah,
you are. You are.
My brother Ryan and our full-time partner, Brian.
Confusing at all.
Yeah, Brian.
What is your aesthetic when it comes to the kind of knives that you want to create? There's been a long tradition of knife making in Europe and now in Japan, which we're both fans of.
Yeah.
And there are American knife makers coming out of the woodworks and making some incredible stuff.
Yeah, there's a renaissance. A friend of mine runs a bladesmithing school in Maine, and he said since television show Forged in Fire, it's called, came out, the interest in his school has increased exponentially, and he's fully booked.
Yeah,
knife making school. So, but we've been tinkering for a while, and it's one of those disciplines where the more you do it, the better you're going to get at it. We're fortunate to have we've been practicing the final steps of the knife making process for a long time now, and we're good at it. So it's just moving into those initial the stages before the final finishing and grinding and polishing, which we're really good at. So the forging and the steel work, the hot work is something that's new to us, but it's like anything, you just keep doing it, you learn as you go, and you talk to people who are good at it and get ideas and just get better and better.
Yeah.
But we understand that it's anything that we make is by nature be not as good as the ones that are made by some of the people we represent who are on the shelves at our store, because they've just been doing it.
I mean, you mentioned there are apprenticeships in Japan in particular that last 20 years, I think you said.
Like a lot of disciplines over there, the younger generation will continue to learn from the older generations for as long as the older generations are willing to teach them before they retire. So
are you taking a new direction, doing something a little bit different, your own style, a different aesthetic?
Are Meteors involved?
Meteors, yeah. That's definitely an option. You can take you can make steel from meteorite ore.
That's so cool.
Craft it. We want to continue to, it's fun. It's a fun process. The results are, people appreciate the results. We just don't want to take credit for anyone else's work. And that's why we haven't put our name. There's a number of factories that we could go to. We could contract to put our name on a knife, but we just never felt that that's the right thing to do, because most knives are handmade. There's not like a robot, a factory where you put in the raw materials and out pops a knife. Like, humans are genuinely still involved in this process.
Yeah.
And so we never really thought it the right thing to do, just have our name stamped on a blade that was produced by somebody else. So
no white labeling here.
White labeling, white claw.
Oh,
I'm still finishing mine.
I'm sufficiently buzzed between the ice and the white claw. I think we should dip into this.
This grower champagne.
Yeah.
This shower champagne. I'll pop it.
Shower champagne. I could savor it. Should I try to savor it?
Oh, yeah. It might be messy.
We're in an all-glass booth.
Surrounded by technology.
Ding! Alexia's kind of...
what do these knives look like? Are you guys going to go for more of the Japanese style? Is there an American style?
Yeah, there's an American style. Which is basically like anything you want to do, you can, however you want to make it.
What a bunch of cowboys!
Brian made one with this crazy purple handle the other day, and just looks it's gorgeous.
So American style? What are we doing these days? So who's at the top of the game in the U.S.?
There's a lot of knife makers out in the U.S. I think there's a couple guys who their manufacturing process is still being streamlined. It's just it's harder for the Americans to compete on price with, say, you know, the high end knife makers from Japan, just because their manufacturing processes have been refined. Whereas I think the expectation with American knife makers is, like, I want to make a knife for you, but I also need to show up and sell it.
Right.
I feel like the American knife makers are they kind of have to get involved in their own marketing in order to push their brand. But there's some great knives there's a ton of great knives that are produced here. There's a big show in Atlanta where most American knife makers come to every year, and you see some incredible craftsmanship. There's a massive knife industry in America, but it's just it's much less centralized than, say, in other countries where that export for the world's consumption.
I think one producer that I follow on Instagram, just because his knives are beautiful, is Quentin Middleton.
Yeah.
Middleton down
great
in
guy.
Carolina.
Yeah,
yeah, yeah. Beautiful, beautiful stuff. And I've always wanted to ask about this is a question between of like form and function. These are beautiful things, and how much effort or the beauty comes out of the production and all the little intricacies that come out of it. How much are you thinking about in the production of knives, whether it's going to come out beautifully, and are you sacrificing any kind of durability or function to make them sellable?
You can. The aesthetics of a blade or the handle or the entire knife, the knife maker's in pretty much complete control over what that blade is going to look like. So if he has a vision for the finished product in mind, it's usually the process of getting there is pretty straightforward. It just depends on how you manipulate those materials to create the result you're looking for. But that starts to add up, and the price tag starts to climb. The better you make these things look, the fancier the materials, the more the detail work. It all goes into the manufacturing process. The more robust the manufacturing process is, usually the more expensive.
I mean, I'll be honest. Every time I think about a knife being made, I think about that scene in Kill Bill.
Yeah.
Oh, I was literally thinking the same thing.
Hattori Hanzo.
Yeah, like your knife, Matt, is very pure steel, very basic wooden handle.
Yeah.
But you know, exceptionally high performance.
Yeah.
But you know, it looks that style is like the traditional village blacksmith style.
Yeah.
Where their goal is to make something perfectly functional and offer it at the lowest price possible, so people can cook.
Yeah. No, it's beautiful.
How about your perfect knife?
Ooh, good question.
Yeah, your perfect knife, and do you already own it? Like, or would you make it yourself?
Yeah, fortunately, I get to play with a lot of things. And but there's a shop in Kyoto called, and that it's a pretty well-known brand. And they don't export. It's the name of the knife factory is Aritsugu. Many people pronounce it Aritsugu or Aritsugu. They're in this like shopping mall downtown Kyoto. It's not a very big shop. It's maybe just twice the size, but the demand for their knives is so great. I walked in there last year at 2:30 in the afternoon, and they were practically sold out. And I was like heartbroken because I traveled all the way to Kyoto to check out the shop and get some knives that I can't get in the States because they don't export. So it was an opportunity for me to actually become part of be a knife customer. For the first time, I had to come back the next morning, and right when they opened, they had it restocked. So that's how busy. That's how many knives.
It was like it was completely restocked.
It wasn't even completely restocked. Like the one knife that I was hoping to get a really big chef knife.
Yeah.
And I had to settle for a smaller utility knife. But they're nice. They perform as good or better than a lot of the knives on our shelves. So
that's so cool. And you're going back there this year, yeah.
Yeah, I've got a trip planned for late September. I'm going to take some friends over. Start off in Tokyo.
Is knife tourism a thing? Is this
It is. Yeah. It is a thing. Because when we started the business, there's a knife maker in Oregon who's a master smith. His name's Murray Carter. And he had spent years apprenticing in Japan and learning the way they make knives. And his knives are amongst the best that you can get in America. They're great. But Carter would go to Japan a couple times a year, and he would take guests along with him. So we met a lot of the knife makers work with now when we were with Murray Carter on his trip. But my brother and I were the only two of the group who were in the knife business. There was a photographer from Australia, a plastic surgeon from LA, and there was someone they were completely unrelated to the knife industry.
I think that's amazing.
They just wanted to go and tour Japan with this master knife maker, and they had as good a time as we did. They were into it.
So. That's awesome.
So, where do you see? Let's just assume that the knife industry in America keeps booming, and there's more and more interest. Where do you see it going?
Yeah, I think brands will start to compete.
Yeah.
And there's, a lot of really good knife makers are completely self-sustainable through Instagram. It's the sales channels have changed quite a bit.
Interesting.
And so a lot of the independent knife makers who have developed followings or a significant follower list on, say, Instagram, or it's mostly Instagram, I think, these days, can basically, put a picture of something they made up and it'll be instantly gone. And in a lot of cases, they already have waiting lists where they basically stop taking orders because they're booked solid for
that's amazing.
5 or 10 years.
Well, you should know that Shift Drink has almost, 500 followers on Instagram. So
yeah,
if you guys ever want to just throw a knife our way, we'd be happy to put it on the gram. All 500.
For sure.
And you mentioned also you have some Japanese guests coming to visit in the fall or September.
Yeah. Shibata-san, who makes he's the president of Masakage, and he's basically, started off as a sharpener, a mobile sharpener, and became one of the best sharpeners in Japan for a young guy. Started this company and basically recruited a number of other senior accomplished blacksmiths to produce blades under his line. So he's coming over, Kurosaki-san, Kazuo Nomura, and Yoshimi Kato. So there's four, who I consider rock star blacksmiths are going to bless us with their presence in September on the 13th and the 14th. And so we're going to hopefully do some forging out front of Union Market.
Cool.
Quick demonstration.
Wow. And, so all of our DC chefs and knife nerds, listen up, man. This is going to be pretty cool.
That sounds amazing.
Yeah, so hopefully...
Even the idea of blacksmiths becoming rock stars these days.
Oh, I love it.
Yeah, but they just want to see the White House.
You can take them to the Capitol. It's a lot more impressive.
Right. Yeah.
That's what everybody always imagines anyways.
There are some knives at the White House lawn.
That's awesome. Do you guys, does Brian have a forge or access to a forge in D.C.?
My brother's got one. He uses a gas forge at his house. And so they've been doing a lot of the hot work there. And then, our shop in Union Market is actually fully capable of doing the finishing work.
Cool.
So basically they'll forge stuff there. Brian's also gone. We have a good friend in North Carolina named Dan Hilgenberg of Silverthorn Knives. And Brian's also he's gone down there and made, forged in batches with Dan. And then finished, brought the cutout blades up here to be finished in our shop. So
yeah.
We're slowly just adding equipment, but our main line of business is our sharpening service,
yeah.
And that takes time. So unfortunately, absolutely. I wish we had more time to make stuff
to play. I'm still trying to convince my partner to allow me to build a bread oven in the backyard. So a forge would be a whole other story.
They're probably the same.
I guess if I do it right. Every time I walk by you guys at Union Market, you guys have your headphones in, you're listening to music. I'm guessing it's always Celine Dion, but do you guys have a go-to soundtrack?
the Ryan's a big metal head. And my brother's yeah. that's Atlas is
I guess that's Whitney
a big
Houston.
Celine fan. Yeah, my brother's actually he's a pretty solid guitarist, bass player, and he likes to rock it out. Right. And Chef Mooney from Bidwell is also a big metal head, so he's always coming over and hanging out, and they're blasting metal.
Awesome.
But other than that, usually if you see me with headphones, they're just earmuffs.
Yeah.
I'm literally just imagining it outside of Union Market, just blasting metal music, a Forge, Japanese knife makers just going at it.
That's so cool.
This is going to be some event.
Yeah. I can't wait.
It's going to be a scene. I can't wait too. I'm psyched. So.
And how is it two brothers become brothers in arms here?
Yeah, well, after the first weekend, the first weekend I set up shop at Union Market with my little sharpening stones, I had so much work to do by the end of the weekend. And at that time, Union Market, they did a soft opening, so they were only open Friday, Saturday, Sunday. But basically, I had like 6 or 7 dozen knives that I had to bring back the next weekend sharpened for customers. And my brother was living up in Boston at the time. It's like, I called him, I said, hey, I'll pay you a bunch of money to drive down here and help me sharpen knives for a week. And he's like, all right. he showed up the next
day. Pretty spot on impersonation.
Yeah. He showed up the next day with his dog and a duffel bag full of clothes and ended up not going back to his house until that November. 2 months went by before he even got back. We had so many knives to sharpen. People saw that we were there. And I wasn't sure when I started it, because I started it because I needed my knife sharpened and I couldn't find any. I'd gone to a couple of hardware stores who just butchered my blades.
Oh.
And I was like, I guess I got to learn how to do this myself. And, started doing it for friends. And I was like, oh, maybe this could be an interesting side gig.
Right on.
That's actually one question I got from one of your former customers, Ben Gilligan of Room 11.
Yeah.
And I asked him for some ideas. And he wanted me to ask, why should we go to you?
Oh.
Versus wherever place that does it for like $2.
Oh, right on. Yeah, I mean, we're gonna do it better.
Yeah.
that's what it comes down to, results. We take great care to really optimize the geometry of the blade and create sharpness while removing as little steel as possible. And we've just been, it's all we've been doing for 6 years. Tens of thousands of knives. We're pretty good at it. So it's not the cheapest service in DC, but you at least know you're getting it done right.
Yeah.
But are you okay with, let's say, the home cook, the avid cooker who gets their own stone and sharpens on their own?
Yeah. It's a great way to save money.
But it's not gonna be as good as
It can be.
Mine's definitely not.
Yeah. when I started the business,
I had a friend sharpen one of my knives and it's all kind of banged up, but it got sharper slightly.
Yeah. No, you can definitely, you can have good results at home. It just takes practice and it takes time. And that's what we try to save people. But when I started, I think back to how good I was when I started the business, and I'm not very proud. If I see the results of what I used to do back then, we're significantly better now. But water stones are Japanese, or the sharpening stones that we use that you can get on the market for relatively expensively, they do the work for you. You literally rub the blade on the stone and it becomes sharp. It's kind of a magic thing. And if you do it, there's some tricks where you can do it efficiently, but it comes by experience. So
I think that's art, though, right? Like, I will always look back at stuff I've done previously and just kind of cringe, because it's part of the process, and that's part of living and growing up. You get better at things.
Yeah, you do.
But you have to put, there's a factor of putting time into it. Yeah. You have to really work at it on a regular basis and not just half-ass it every now and then.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think if you're someone who tries your best and you keep persistent, you do that day in and day out, then you do improve, and I think people eventually appreciate what you're doing. We can't. I'd love to say we've made 100% of our customers completely happy, but I know that's impossible.
Yeah,
We try our best. If someone isn't happy with what we're able to do for them, then
I think that applies to bartending, that applies to cooking, applies to everything.
Yeah.
All right. Well, let's cut to our next little game here called Rapid Fire.
Time for the payback.
Rapid Fire.
All right. Quick answers. Well, as you're chugging your... Oh, by the way, this Guerrero champagne, delicious.
It really is. It's beautiful. It's nice.
Slightly oxidized. It tastes a little bit like sherry.
Yeah.
Which I guess, I mean, the sharpening stones are porous, so they might let...
Yeah, I'm not sure how old it is. I think the disgorgement date is like 5 years ago. Wow. So it's I don't think it's the freshest champagne, but it's solid.
That's awesome. It's good. No, I like it.
Yeah. Since we're talking about music before, what was your favorite band 20 years ago?
Ooh, Tears for Fears. That was for you, Brian. That was me. I whistle that tune in the shop constantly, and it really gets into Atlas's head. And he's like, why every day?
What, if anything, would you want to be turned into a pinball game?
Ooh. God, there's so many pinball games. I know this is rapid fire.
Anything.
The Dinner at Roses.
Yeah?
A Dinner at Roses luxury turned into a pinball game.
I like roses. It's good.
Yeah.
There's some characters there. So,
Aaron Silverman, if you're listening, we have an idea for you.
Pinball game.
Wow, that's awesome.
You can make it, you can turn it into an actual dish.
you get to the lychee salad and it's just...
multi-ball. So it's your day off. You already chose to go to a pinball bar. What else would you do? A dream day off.
Oh, dream day off.
Well, I think he's kind of living it tomorrow.
Yeah, tomorrow I'm flying to Louisville. I'm going to spend 4 days on the Bourbon Trail with a childhood friend.
Yeah.
Yeah. Which is a bucket list thing for me. But today I'm doing it. It's great to chill out. My son's on vacation. So I'm also get a little break from parenting, which is most parents will understand is nice.
Yeah,
to have once in a while.
Yeah, I'm suddenly understanding why I went to summer camp as a kid. It wasn't for me; it was more for them.
That's true.
We are in a week of summer comfort or discomfort, depending on who you are.
It's been very, very pleasant.
A lot of rain, a lot of humidity. Do you have any sweltering summer guilty pleasures?
We hit a Nats game a couple weeks ago, and I think it was during that heat wave, the hottest. It was like the hottest day.
Yeah,
it's like, well, it's a night game. Hopefully, it'll cool down. I think it, like, Nats Stadium got hotter.
Yeah,
after the sun got down, everyone was just sitting there melting. Hit up a Nats game. It's probably one of my guilty pleasures.
I've been here for 16, 17 years now. I've never been to a Nats game.
I thought you were about to... Oh, God, I hate you.
I want to, though. I think all my friends just know how much I don't like sports, and they've assumed I don't want to go to a game, but I want to go. So.
Okay, we'll do a shift drink outing to a Nats game.
I would love that.
And we'll sneak in all the alcohol.
Beautiful.
They're a ton of fun.
Don't catch us.
I mean, I'm a Sox fan, a Red Sox fan, and the Sox are in town. Yeah. So that's... why I actually went that day.
Okay.
And that's my NL team, though. They're still the hometown love.
The DC United also just started playing in their new stadium. A couple weeks ago.
Really impressive looking.
We should go there, too.
I would love that.
In graphic detail, tell us about your worst cut.
Yeah, right in front of a customer. The area under my index finger, kind of where my thumb would come in contact, making a fist. If you've ever been in my shop, we make the knives stand up by sticking them in corks. So I was trying to replace the blade back into this little sliced cork, and the cork slipped and just... yeah, like I said, filleted
my
hand across the bottom of my finger. But this knife was great. This knife was so sharp. And the cut was so clean that it was completely healed without even leaving a scar within a week. That's how
That's the sign of a good knife.
That was a good one. Yeah, I had to. I went to. This is the only time I'd ever gone to the emergency room for stitches. But the emergency room was too busy, and I had a flight to catch. And I was like, I just can't get this. I don't have time to wait. So I just stuck it with tape, and I taped it up. And yeah, that was probably the most blood in shop history.
Woo. All right, another reason to have very sharp knives.
They heal fast.
Yeah, you save money on medical bills.
Yeah.
All right. Well, Derek, thanks so much for joining us this week.
Thanks, guys.
It's been fun having you on.
It's a pleasure. I've listened to so many of these podcasts. It's good to finally be on.
For those of you listening, you can revisit this week's episode or previous episodes on iTunes or wherever you grab your podcasts. We're on Spotify now. What up? And you can find us on all the social medias at ShiftDrink. DC.
Don't forget to throw us a review on iTunes as well, or give us 1 star on Yelp.
Yeah, let's give 1 star.
1 star? We're a 1 star.
Shining
Yelper.
Star.
A special thank you to Jeffrey Lemieux for our intro music and DJ RecTech for our hilarious sound effects.
Next week, Bill Murray goes on a rant to.
I wrote this.
Sorry. Goes on a rant to chastise us on the proper omelet technique. No excuses.
All right. And one final word from Mr. Jonathan Gold, as he wrote, a week after the 1992 LA riots, similarly turbulent times as right now, quote, we are all citizens of the world. We are all strangers together. Thanks.
Thanks for listening to this program on Full Service Radio, broadcasting and recording from the Line Hotel in Adams Morgan, Washington, D.C. Full Service Radio programming can be accessed live and archived on fullserviceradio.org. Our talk programming is available on most podcast apps like iTunes and Stitcher, and our DJ sets are available on mixcloud.com/fullserviceradio. Full Service Radio features over 30 weekly shows and over 50 local hosts covering every topic imaginable. If you want to be a guest or get involved, email us at info@fullserviceradio.org. Follow us on Twitter @FullServiceRDO, on Instagram and Facebook @FullServiceRadio. Thanks for listening.